Welcome back, everyone, to Inside Texas Baseball here in a rainy Austin, Texas. I'm your host, as always, Evan Beath, joined by Nash Talks Texas. This is a new one for us because we've been doing this show for less than a year, and it's, you know, been pretty positive, all things considered, Nash, but I don't really know how you can take any positives from what happened this weekend. Arkansas, it just gave Texas the B2A, a 3-0 take a sweep in Fayetteville, and it wasn't particularly close for a lot of these games, Nash. What was your immediate reaction to some of the Friday game? What were you thinking going after that game? Where was your head at as we headed into the rest of the weekend?
Friday, it was just, hey, get back out there. Let's take the series. You know, we got our ass kicked, for lack of better words, right? And going back out there, you know, competing. I like to see the boys compete how they did. Obviously, the game kind of got away from it. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but. I mean, everything was still on the table after Friday, and it really did also feel like that too, but at the same time, that's sometimes baseball is a cruel mistress, man. It's a cruel sport.
And unfortunately for some of you guys as well, the spring practice sale is no longer around. We don't have any big things to promote, but of course, Inside Texas is the place to go for all of your Texas football, baseball, and basketball needs. We are always writing about Texas baseball over on there, whether it be good or bad. Some of our fans don't like my anti-superstitious writing there, but listen, it's still going to happen. I got a report. So we'll jump right into game one, which actually I got that wrong. It was a Thursday game. In Fayetteville, Texas goes over to face Zach Root, who I think he was the number one transfer pitcher in the portal this last year from ECU, comes over to Arkansas. It's a big get for them. He'd struggled at times a little bit, especially his last three series where Arkansas had dropped a lot of series before this matchup, which is part of why they showed up so hot. Root hadn't been pitching so well, but man, he gave Arkansas some of the best eight innings of pitching that we've seen on Texas's side or against them all year. One of the best performances the SEC has seen this year. And Texas came up or hit just the ball just two times. It was bottom of the order. I think it was Rodriguez and Williams, too, or maybe Duplante. I forgot exactly who, but it was just Texas got completely shut down. And it was the game where their pitching did not great, but at least they, after Ruta Rioja's kind of explosion in the fourth, that they subdued the rest of the Arkansas order. But it was a really tough one for the Bats. Probably their worst game. I think you have a stat about that, Nash, about just how bad that the hitting was.
Yeah, unfortunately, that Saturday game, that we had a .071 batting average, which we've only had four batting averages that are .71 or lower. The lowest that we've had in the last – well, in the last 5 years. In the last 5 years, the lowest that we've gone to is .69. And – the first time that we had the .69 in the last 5 years was against Arkansas in the Globe Life tournament that they got going on up there. So obviously not, you know, Arkansas seems to have a little bit of a Texas number with two of the four worst batting averages games in the last 5 years. So it is what it is, but you got to just move on.
Well, this is less of a baseball take, but it feels like for all the success Texas has had entering the SEC in a lot of their sports, in all their major four, five, six sports, there's still that one team who's holding them back from being at the very top, it feels like. You know, in football, it's obviously the Georgia team. Basketball, they were themselves holding back. But in women's basketball, South Carolina and Dawn Staley have really been giving them the business, for lack of a better term. And, of course, baseball and softball. Softball was already Oklahoma, but baseball now, Arkansas, is really that team that feels like Texas, they might have their number a little bit. So it may not be the last time these two teams face this year, but Root is the best pitcher in this matchup if they are facing, and he really showed that on Friday. Really not much to talk about this game apart from, you know, I guess my take on it would be that if there's any one game where Texas has felt all season that they needed Max Ballou and now Jared Spencer, it was this Friday game because no Spencer coming on Friday. Rioja's maybe a week late to that struggle. He was really good against A&M, but it was his first time doing that Friday start. It didn't feel like it was really, really necessary really ready to do that today and or on Friday and or Thursday. I keep messing up. And that showed up, I think, a lot in those first three, four innings when the Razorbacks just pounced on him. And then Texas didn't have Ballou or really a lot of top-of-the-order batting to get them out of that hole and get them out of that rut.
Yeah, I mean, you saw the Ruger Rioja's kind of had a – I don't want to call it a bad day. Like, he didn't look bad out there, right? It was just more or less – they were just hitting balls, and the balls were flying far at just really bad points. Even if they were all just solo shots, I mean, he's walking dudes with two strikes, and that's the thing that kills you, is when you got two strikes on a guy, you can't walk people. And we just, I mean, this is just, this also is an all weekend long thing, and we'll talk more about it. But I mean, Arkansas, they just kept getting walks. And then every single time they walked, the next guy hits a home run. And it was just a rinse and repeat thing all weekend. But one guy that really stood out to me, and it's overshadowed because the game is already at a 9-0 lead, right? But Cody Howard came in and pitched one hell of
a really good game.
I mean, he only gave up one hit through 3.1 innings pitch. Bryce Navarre, he got out there too. One inning pitch, no hits. I mean, look, this is, it's not like they had already put in their backups and all that stuff. I mean, this is, and it's honestly kind of impressive considering that, hey, this is a team that was hitting the ball very well that day. And so they were seeing the ball well. They were getting good hits. And Cody Howard was able to shut him down. So obviously you kind of, I mean, you're never going to start Cody Howard over Ruger Rojas, but hindsight 2020, you're like, oh man, we should have started that guy.
Well, at least it makes you confident that Howard can pitch in the SEC, which he seemed like the next guy to. Or a lot of pitching calls. Yeah. And a lot of baseball, college baseball, is just, can this week we get one new guy out of the bullpen? And Texas has already got a wealth of riches in the bullpen. But yeah, this weekend, 31 free passes for Texas pitching between hit by pitches and walks. The hit by pitches and walks really showed up the next day. That walking wasn't as terrible for Rojas. And yeah, like we said, a little bit of the power numbers crept up there for Arkansas. But yeah, just a big shock as Texas gets pretty much blown out in that Thursday game. Wasn't particularly close, but you know, you can move on to the weekend. You get to your next game. So we said before this that, hey, this could be a series loss. It felt like there was a chance that, you know, Friday something bad happens and Texas drops the game. But take one more of those games and you're good. And that's what Texas was shooting for by, obviously, Saturday. But even Friday, I was saying, like, let's just win one. Let's take a game. And so Friday comes around. You're facing their number two, Gage Wood, who had four innings pitched, but it was really their bullpen between Gakel, I think his name is, and Jimenez, who got to Texas. Luke Harrison settled down after that second inning. I didn't think he had a bad outing. I didn't think Duplantier, Saunier, Howard, or anything like that, Walker, were particularly bad. It was just the bats were just a little bit better for Arkansas. There wasn't a lot of timely hitting for Texas. A lot of free passes, like you said, it was 9 walks and 5 hit by pitches for Texas. But that timely hitting is what I'm coming back to, because there's at least 2 or 3 different spots where Texas either had a runner in scoring position or 2 on or both, and they just weren't coming up. And this feels different to what's been going on the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that second inning. It's just kind of almost the epitome of the weekend. And really, I mean, if you look at it on game two, I'm just going to say game two instead of saying Friday or Saturday.
Throw
me off. But so on game two, I mean, it's a 6-1 ball game at the end of the game. And you look back and you're like, okay, well, 4 of those runs were a walk or a hit by pitch. And you go to the second inning, Helfrich hit by pitch. That guy scores.
Yep.
Thomas Jr. hit by pitch. He scores. Aloy, he gets walked. He scores. You get rid of that, man, and it's just, it's a lot different of a ball game, especially late. Like the mentality that you have going to bats, it's a lot different. It's just, it's a different ball game, but at the same time, just that second inning kind of got away from Luke Harrison with control wise. But that's one thing that I just want to see the Texas team do, is just kind of come back out and really execute the control this next weekend.
Yeah, I think the control is the biggest thing that Leaner's going to be talking to his pitchers about, because it was just uncanny how many walks were coming out in real, like you said, with Rojas, it was some two strike walks that he gave up. He had the batter in the right spot, but some of Harrison's weren't particularly competitive, and that happened with a few of the pitchers this weekend. And you just can't have that against a team of Arkansas's caliber, who maybe they're not going to be ranked number two. We'll talk about rankings coming up, but they're top three team in the country. I'd say pretty unanimously at this point with this one they provided. So the real turning point for me, I wanted to make sure I got the inning right, was that fifth inning where Williams just hit a double. Borba advances to third. It's second and third, and Texas is only down 3. The top of the order is coming up. Ethan Mendoza is coming up, and you have a chance to, after a horrible weekend of hitting, you haven't really scored at all, to take that Galvan home run from the inning before and then build momentum off that, get Mendoza on, get him a single to score 2, get another good hitter on base. And, Mendoza hits the ball. It's a weak ground out to shortstop, but it just felt like an opportunity that was lost. The top of the order should have been capitalizing on, that you'd hope for from your best hitters on your team. And after that, the hitting stalled out quite a bit. They didn't score another run for the rest of the game. I think they only got two runners on in the eighth inning, I want to say. Eighth or ninth, one of the two. It was the ninth inning, I got it. But, yeah, it was just a rough day for most of the bats. But it felt like right there, that was the chance to potentially take back control of the series, and it didn't show up right there.
Yeah, I mean, really, and also game two, you mentioned there was also the time where we had Casey Borba and Will Gasparino on first and second.
Yeah.
And there's an infield pop-up, and we have one out. And this team, it's easy to say, oh, well, there was going to be two outs anyways. Okay, it's not that big of a deal. This is a really, really good two-out hitting team. And I can't think – I mean, I can think of a ton of times, like Georgia, even Auburn, LSU.
Auburn had a few.
Where we're hitting – we're getting, like, actual, like, two-out rallies, and we're getting, like, a lot of two-out hits, Texas A&M. And it's just – You can't have that moment of it. You could really feel like the frustration of the like kind of, and it was mainly, look, I'm not trying to throw any guys under the bus, but at this point, everybody knows it. Borba kind of advanced with not, you know, just a lapse in thinking, and Gasparino's like, what's going on? He moves. I love to see Jim Schlossnagle. He pulled them. Mm-hmm. Like I love that, and not the fact that like just pulling the guys and benching them, but really sending a message like, hey, I don't care if you're a starter. I don't care how good you are for this team. If you're not in the game, right? If your mind's not 100% in this game, you don't need to be on the field. And I love to see that from Jim Schlossnagle, but at the same time, I also love to see that next day you see Casey Borba and Will Gasparino out there again.
Great
and, you know, you're not punishing him. You're not going overboard on a punishment. You're just kind of sending a message saying, hey, some unacceptable crap just happened and we can't be having that happen again. So hopefully we never see that again in the season.
Yeah. And sometimes you need losses like this, and you couldn't have, I could have said that better. That was my exact take on the situation. So I think we can go over to game three here, which was the bats did wake up a little bit. You saw Jalen Flores finally really spark some.
Really the whole top of the lineup.
Yeah, definitely. And that was something that I was ready to come into this segment talking about. Is, hey, this top of the lineup, I'm starting to ring the alarm bells because Mendoza's been a little bit iffy at leadoff recently, and then Flores really hasn't been hitting very well. You got Galvan always hitting great. Gasparino, sometimes you think the numbers are bad, and then you look over and he's still top four in OPS and slugging and all these stats, but it felt like specifically Mendoza and Flores weren't having the best weekends. And then Mendoza has a hit and two walks. He was extremely efficient, scored two runs. Flores had four RBI, two from two home runs. Galvan got on Schuessler. Gasparino, I believe, hit a home run as well. He did, yeah. So Texas
almost robbed too.
Yeah, oh my god! And those I thought he had the first one. He looked like he did, and then the announcers went home run. I was like, oh god!
He just mistimed the jump on that one, and then the other one just like barely touched his glove.
Mm-hmm. Grazed right over. Unfortunate. Those could have been big swings. Felt like this game had so many big swings that just didn't quite go Texas's way. And Arkansas's bats just exploded. It was the Aloy brothers who had been giving Texas fits all weekend, but Reese Robinette had his own two bombs. Grubbs was all right as a starter. I'm glad he got a chance to start. This would have been the weekend to do it. He got a 3 1/3. It's feeling a little bit like it's hard to stretch him into that fourth inning, which we've been talking about with, I believe, Spencer earlier in the season. It's just maybe he just needs to pitch more in a starting situation, but he definitely looked a little banged up in the first three innings. And then, of course, the fourth inning was when Arkansas really, really piled on the runs. You saw the doubles and the home runs, and then that was kind of it. Burns comes in, and he has an even worse appearance, doesn't even get through 1 2/3. He gives up 5 earned runs during doing that. Some of those runs, also, he gave up four grubs. So really, really bad performance, in my opinion, from Burns. He just didn't look like he had his stuff. It was just straight line. It was things that, you know, Arkansas, frankly, knew what was coming, and they pounced on it. So by the time Texas had scored their 6 runs, it was still not enough because Arkansas was starting to pull away again.
Yeah, I mean, the Burns thing, that's just really interesting. One, I mean, that would have been the guy that I probably would have rolled with.
Oh, me too. Carter,
yeah. Just because you kind of want to get him in that role anyways. And then Max Grubbs, just him being in that, like, kind of like just that, there's something about that mentality of, hey, I'm coming in with, like, back on, like, my back is against the wall. That dude just thrives in that situation, yeah. Right? And that's honestly a rare thing to get. But when you look at Burns, man, one, I did like that he had a lot of strikeouts early on, right? He looked like he was having a really good day, but like you said, that fastball was a little flat. I mean, it's a great example of, hey, velo and everything, right? You got to have movement on that pitch.
Yeah.
Because these dudes, they go into the batting cages. They're able to hit 100 miles an hour, right? Because they have to. You got to be able to gear up for that guy that can hit 100, especially when you got a guy that's up there that can pump 99 and burns. So,
yeah.
Velo is not the issue. It's just when you get that movement with the velo, that's when pitchers can really start to get nasty. And he just didn't really have that this weekend. But I'm not that worried because, I mean, baseball, it's a sport of attrition. You know, you're going to fail. And for us to really kind of run into our first failure at this point in the season, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, and I also felt with Grubbs, you know, the home run he gave up was just such an uncharacteristic pitch. Like, when do you ever see him loop a curveball like that?
Or Dylan Volantis.
Yeah, Volantis. Part of it felt like, obviously, this team hadn't given up or anything, but you got to be demoralized after the first two games, and you're getting thrown into a spot where both Grubbs and Burns had not pitched in that situation at all this year. This was pretty much a first for them because Texas has been so good. They've been rolling through games, and Fridays have been pretty simply Spencer Rios and then Grubbs and then Volantis, or just Volantis if it needs to be that. And that's been a good formula, but you're not used to what happened. And, it, you know, it's not going to be – not to sound too baseball-y and too old-head about it, but you do need to lose in baseball sometimes. You need to have some games that just don't go your way so that when it really, really matters – because at the end of the day, this game mattered, but it didn't matter. You're not going to – your season's not over because this happened, no matter what people might say.
Everything is on the table. Like the conference – winning the conference is still on the table.
Yeah.
Hosting a regional, still on – well, I mean, that's already racked up.
Super regional,
still on the table, right? Like,
Omaha.
Everything is still on the table. So, at the end of the day, yeah, it really does not matter. Like, we could – if we go and we accomplish everything that we want to in the rest of the season, we're going to look back and laugh at this Arkansas series. And Arkansas fans, if they want to tweet about, you know, that series, go ahead.
I will say part of me this weekend did have some suspicions coming in about, like, was this really the number one team? Because obviously on paper, like, everything resume-wise, it was the number one team. There was no questioning that. But was the offense going to be good enough to be the favored team going into Omaha or the regionals or whatever? Or what was the pitching staff really this good? And I still think the pitching staff is definitely this good. It's even with all these terrible numbers that came out of this weekend, they're still number one in top five in a lot of important stats. Still number one in the SEC and ERA, but the bats are definitely a bit of a concern heading into the end of the year, and Ballou is going to be a huge addition. But is Flores going to be a positive player in the postseason? Are you going to see Gasparino not striking out too much? How deep can the order go? Is Williams and Farmer still going to be plus hitters this late into the season? Rodriguez, what is he? He had a pretty good weekend, but nothing crazy. So I do think that the formula for Texas to win is still very much there. It's elite pitching, get you through seven innings where you're ahead. The clutch hitting can come up and get you insurance in the end, and then you've got maybe the best closer in all of college baseball to show up in Dylan Volantis. But I'm not sure how much you can say they are the number one team in the nation purely as I'm the most confident they're going to win the national championship. But we can talk about rankings and analytics later in the show, and I don't know what your take is on what I just said, but yeah, I'm just not – I'm thinking some of my questions got a little bit more answers than I thought they would.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I'm still – I don't know. Like, as far as, like, teams go, Texas – if I were to put a list of, like, four teams together that I think probably have the best shot to win the national championship, it's Texas, North Carolina, Florida State, Arkansas. Those are my four teams. I'm not really worried about Texas because we haven't seen I wish I sent Homer the graph for this, but we really haven't walked. We've been really consistent with how much we walk teams. And if we avoid the walks, he might be able to pull this one up. I put out a tweet that some people were, you know, saying that this is like me, you know, coping for a loss. But like, yeah. I have in bold that we got our ass kicked. Like, what are you talking about? But I mean, if you just avoid giving up those walks, then man, it's a lot closer game. I mean, you're talking about Arkansas only has two runs on game two. That's a 1-2 ball game that didn't score from walks. The last game, it would have been a 7-7 ball game. Six of their 13 runs scored from walks. It's if you can limit the walks, you can, and yeah, here it is. If you can limit the walks, man, you can just like, this team is in it. And it's a situation where maybe there's a different mentality with the bats, and maybe Texas walks out with having just lost the first game. And we've seen them respond just like they have all year with the other two games.
Yep.
But at the same time, like you mentioned earlier, I'm almost kind of glad this has happened, because it's like, and Homer will kind of get this, because I'm not sure if I'm spoiling some of the the secret sauce that was made in the last season, but he may or may not have been happy when we lost a game, so that we could so that he could actually get some like serious like work done on being judgmental about this team. Yeah. Actually, like, instead of just saying, oh yeah, this is a really good team, blah 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 blah. Like, Max Wiener can actually go out there and say, I get to coach today, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, I get to yell at some dudes. So you get to remind some dudes, it's not just having to temper expectations and all that stuff. It's a different level of coaching going on. They get to actually do it. But another guy that really stood out to me is Jonah Williams, man. That dude can fly. Like, man, that, you want to talk
a ball about player.
Like, they were glazing him. It's funny to hear Kyle Peterson call Ravage glazing it, but 100% deserved. I mean, that dude, there's a foul ball that, like, I'm like, most people aren't within 10 feet of that foul ball.
Yeah.
And Jonah Williams is waiting on the damn thing at the edge of the fence, like, watching it go four rows back. So that's a dude that I think you saw multiple times where, like, he should have called, like, when he went to center field, should have called off Flores. Flores kind of had to go too far into center. There was a time where Will Gasparino, he probably, Will Gasparino's drifting over too much, and he's like, you can tell Will Gasparino's waiting for Williams to call the ball off. But once he gets his confidence, man, I'm – that dude, we saw him – he had a really nice double in the game, obviously in the game that we were doing nothing into.
So yeah, right.
You hate and love to see that, but – he was doing really well again. Not really well, but he did all right versus a really good pitching staff. It's just, for a dude that's 17 years old out there, it's not normal to watch a guy, step in. Like it's real. Like they were saying, and it was like really sinking in. It's like, this dude's supposed to be at prom right now. He's in Arkansas, and he's supposed to be at prom.
There's something about 17-year-old Williams this year in college sports that are just infatuating to the viewer. We're gonna take a quick break here. You're gonna hear from Laura Baker, and we'll be right back with the future of Texas baseball.
Hi, I want to tell you about Laura Baker. If you're looking for a new home in the 512, or even at this point, let's face it, 737 area code, there's only one number to call. That's Laura Baker at 512-784-0505. As a member of the elite Andy Allen team with Keller Williams, Laura has helped Longhorns find the home of their dreams in Central Texas. Just ask our resident sex symbol, Ian Boyd, who moved all the way from Michigan to Texas with Laura's help. Laura can help you find what you're looking for in the 512, the 737, or even parts of the 254 and the 210. Just, give her a call at 512-784-0505. Her email is in the description, as well as the rest of her contact details. She's a friend. Give her a call.
Well, despite our tone, this Texas team is still 19-5 in the SEC. They've only dropped 8 games on the year. 3 of them just coming from one series, a lot of these Tuesday games. So Texas is fine. We're going to talk about rankings later, but first, we got Florida, who, first, let's pay our respects to Lamar. I wonder how many Kendrick memes are going to show up on the scoreboard.
Hey, last midweek game of the year.
Yeah, right? I'm not able to go because I have some graduation stuff going on. I graduated this week, by the way, guys. Just a little shout out to myself.
Congratulations.
I won't be able to go to that, which sucks. You'd like to go to the final midweek game of the year. But, yeah, last one, it's on Tuesday against Lamar. Hopefully Texas is just – unfortunately for Lamar, they got to face the Texas post sweep, who's just going to annihilate them in theory. But see Bing, maybe see Flores pitch. But this Florida series is of course important, because Texas's magic number is 5 still in the SEC. It was the same last week because they lost all these games. But every Arkansas loss gets Texas that much closer to the SEC championship. Every Texas win gets them closer. You win 5 out of your last 6, which is very possible, Florida and Oklahoma, you're just the SEC champions, and that's where you're at. You win 4, but Arkansas loses to either Tennessee or LSU, even one game. They drop one game. you win it at Texas. So they're still very much in the lead. They're in a really good spot. They're in the driver's seat, but it's a little less easy than it was a few days ago. Arkansas's got a much harder schedule, as I've said, because Florida is a good team. They've been hot. They're one of the teams that have been on the uptick in the SEC, but still a bottom eight team in the conference. Not a true star-studded team like Arkansas that comes in. But what's the scouting report for a team like this that Texas really needs to win after this Arkansas series?
I mean, honestly, it's you look at the numbers here, and for me, aside from the pitching staff, one, their pitching staff, they get a lot of strikeouts. That's one thing that stands out to me. Mm-hmm. It's almost the inverse of Texas, right? They're top five in strikeouts per nine, but they're in the 50s to like 80s through the rest of the way. But like Texas, we're top five in, you know, opponent batting average, earned run average, walks, hits, but we're not getting a lot of strikeouts. So this is a staff that I think the Texas bats can get to, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, we've seen some strikeouts, and you mentioned Will Gasparino striking out a lot. I mean, this is going to be a really big game for guys like Will Gasparino, Tommy Farmer, to, you know, not have a lot of swing and miss and to cut down the strikeouts. That the Florida team, and they can hit, man. Good batting yeah. average, good on base percentage. They get a lot of hits, and they hit the ball out a lot too. So, I mean, and specifically looking at the offensive stats, it's not to the level, right? But this weekend kind of reminds me a little bit of like an Arkansas junior. This yeah. is a team that early on in the year, they were like a top five team, definitely top 10. They were winning a lot of games early on, and then they hit SEC play and then they just fell like a rock. But they've been winning some games lately and winning some really, you know, good series. So it'll be interesting. I mean, this Florida team is coming in a lot hotter than they were a couple weeks ago.
Well, literally a month ago, they lose a series to Vanderbilt and get swept. Their offense really doesn't show up. But then Tuesday, they go and beat Florida State, who was a top 10 team at the time. They sweep Missouri, which everyone does at this point. Then they win series against Mississippi State. Arkansas destroys South Carolina this weekend. So they've won four of their last series, and they've done some in pretty dominant fashion, beating Arkansas, something Texas couldn't do. So it does seem like they're going to be without one of their better hitters, Colby Shelton, an infielder. An upperclassman who's one of their really top bats, which makes their lineup a little bit less deep. They've got some Tommy Farmers and Jaden Duplantier. That's maybe disrespectful to Farmer, but they've got some guys at the bottom of the order that strike out a lot and don't get on base enough. That maybe can be exploitable for this Texas staff. But like you said, they've got some real hitters. They've got some guys who, I mean, you can see that number 4 for batting average, who get on base a ton, and they're really good at just getting around the bases. They have some athletes in the team. I do think Texas, like you said, where you can win this series is the bats outdoing their pitching in comparison to what's going on with the other side of things, because, you know, 65 in WHIP is not terrible, but when Texas is number 7 coming out with that, you're getting 0.24 more per inning. It's really favoring Texas to get on base that much. If the walks even just get back to a neutral number, regress back to the mean a little bit, they could still, you know, they still walk 10, 11 guys this weekend. It's not great, but at least it's a lot better than what it was last weekend. And you're in so much of a better place. Say it again.
31 walks. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. if you're even at 16 between the walks, yeah,
if you can just cut it down to half, which would be almost the season high for an SEC series for Texas. But man, like looking at this graph too, like this is the funny thing that I like when you see, I know there was some scuttlebutt about, I think Chris Phillips from not Locked On SEC, but SEC okay. Unfiltered. He's every week he's, you know, going against the Horns, right? He's got his video, and he said, I didn't have a problem with him going against the Horns because I kind of like that. But at the same time, he said that this team, you know, this Texas team, they've been hot. Excuse me? We haven't been hot. Not at all. Look, you see these offensive numbers right here on the season? Yeah, I mean, this team is, I think this Texas team is really, they might be the most dangerous team in all of college baseball, because they are playing like a number. Now, obviously we're coming off of a sweep, right? But overall, they've been playing like a number one team, and that's without hot bats. Yeah. If you start adding in some hot bats into the equation, man, I mean, like, you just combine hot bats with a Ruger Riojas, so Luke Harrison, a Dylan Valentis, some Max Grubbs, and so that's going to be a bad equation for some teams that have to go to the opposing dugout. So, just, I mean, I really want to see this Texas team really start to heat up this weekend.
Yeah, one of my friends was mentioning that exact same video because he completely disagreed with the idea that Texas was hot. Like, coming into the A&M series, A&M was hot. Been banged up all year. Rodriguez can only hit from one side of the bat. Mendoza goes out. I don't know if you can still hear me. I think, Ballou's been hurt. Spencer's hurt and out for the year. Everywhere has been injured, it feels like, for Texas, even if they're still playing. So this team is going to get healthier, and they're gonna hit a spot where they're going to really start swinging the bat. They're going to have an explosive game. And suddenly all these doubts about the team's offense may just go away for us. But for now, the numbers aren't pretty. For the batting averages and the on bases. And of course, 283 is not a bad batting average, but it's college baseball. This is including games against some of the bad teams in the country. So these numbers can easily go up with a weekend or two against Florida and Oklahoma that they just take over and really get on some bad pitching, which is exactly what you're hoping for as a Texas fan.
And at the end of the day, also, these are just numbers, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's like there's a reason why coaches call people that love stats, stat rats, right? At the end of the day, is did you win or lose? Everything else is just filler.
And I think that takes us right into the rankings, because this is the first time in a while that we've actually had any sort of, ooh, is there going to be any change? Is there going to be some drops? So, of course, D1 baseball is actually the one that's kept Texas at number one, which is pretty interesting. It's one that people have been harping on for not liking Texas. But perfect game drops as far as three, USA Today at one, Athletic, Baseball America number two. What helped Texas was a lot of the teams right behind them these past 2 weeks, the ones that were in the 2 through 10 area, really hadn't been winning. And Arkansas, when they played them, were D1 baseball's number 11 team. So is one series going to jump you up 10 spots ahead of Texas, or are the teams behind Texas really warranted? I think I still would have ranked Texas number one if you're really just looking at the overall resume. But I'd love to hear your take on if this was the number one resume team for you.
I mean, it was just – it was a really – I'm just going to go ahead and say yes, I do think that – number one is the right ranking, because when you look at what's happened, right, Arkansas was at 11. You put yourself in a situation where you're D1 and you're like, okay, I mean, and now this is, they haven't overreacted, right? But you don't want to be overreactionary and just say, okay, they beat Texas at home after they were 3-9 or 3-6 in the past 3-6 in the past 9 SEC games going into the Texas series. And you look at that, that's not a top 5, top 10 team right there. And they were being moved down. They made it to 11. And you can't bump Arkansas up to number one. Just jump all Florida State, who took the series versus Clemson. I think Clemson, if Clemson had took the series with Florida State, they're the easy number one seed to move in, or number one team to move up above Texas. But you look at LSU. LSU took the series, or they lost. Yeah, they lost the series. Mm-hmm. They almost had the series. I kind of turned the game off, and I remind myself about that. But you get the Georgia team. It's the teams that they wanted to move over Texas. You can't, like, you can't move Georgia over Texas when Texas swept Georgia. Now, granted, that is at home, but, I mean, I think at this point, when you start to get into that, like, people are going to start to make too much of a home and away argument.
Yeah.
And it just comes down to, did the team beat that team? If it comes down to, you know, potentially ranking Texas and Arkansas, and we're right next to each other, guess what? Arkansas is going to be above Texas because they swept Texas. That's just how it works. But, I mean, it was the perfect storm of teams losing and winning for Texas to stay right number one.
Well, I get the – of course I get D1 baseball in USA Today. It's just keeping them there. The Athletic put Arkansas ahead of Texas, and I think they had Arkansas ranked higher. I understand that idea, and the method perfect game maybe just doesn't think they're the number one team anymore after that. You drop them two spots. The really one that irked me a bit was Baseball America's poll, because you put Georgia above Texas as the number one team, and – like you said, Texas has swept Georgia at home, but it's the same thing that Texas just had happen on the road. Even if you think that there's home field advantage, give them one game, they still lose the series. And Georgia just played, yeah, they came off a sweep. This is one of the closest series Missouri has had in the SEC. They were within 2 and 3 runs in 2 of these games against Missouri. And, like, that's not a dominant sweep. It's not like some team that's, oh, they're red hot. They just beat Missouri. That's something that they just kind of barely won. So they've won some series, but they just gotten swept by Vanderbilt 2 before, and they dropped a game to, I think it was Oklahoma, the series before that. It's just overall, Texas has a better resume. They have the head-to-head. They haven't been worse in the last, apart from literally this last weekend, they haven't been a worse team. I just don't get why Georgia's number one on Baseball America. The other ones, I understand.
Yeah, and I mean, like, here's the other thing, too, is when you look at the top 25, especially for D1 baseball, there's Texas, Florida State at 2, LSU at 3, North Carolina at 4, Oregon at 5, Georgia at 6, Arkansas 7, Auburn 8. Mm-hmm. And I'll just stop right there. Texas has 3 series wins against some of those teams.
Yeah.
Against the top 8 teams. And you're going to be hard pressed to find another team that has that, has those, you know, can make that claim. So yeah. It's just one of these things like, look, the haters are going to hate, and it is what it is. You just got to ignore them. But I think the, honestly, too, like, this shows that we talked about this earlier in the year, and we kind of started talking about it less. Man, we really had to earn every last little bit of getting into the top 5, getting down to the number 1.
Yep.
And it is, as much as I, like, personally, a little bit of a hot take, I would have been okay with them losing the number 1 seed, number 1, because number 1 seeds historically don't do well in Omaha, right? They historically don't do well in the NCAA tournament, as Arkansas, how that went for them. Now, that also might have been hanging a certain banner, but that's for another story another day. But it was nice to see, like, you know, services like D1 Baseball, USA Today, which is a bunch of coaches. It was nice to see them, you know, say, you know what, we're going to stick with number 1. And not only that, like, you got number 2, number 3. I was legitimately worried. I was like, man, are we going to see some, like, overreaction thing where, like, some rankings put Texas down, like, 7 or put yeah. Texas into, like, 11 or, like, 12? Because I, in my opinion, like, I thought that was completely on the table.
I didn't even thought about that. That would have been quite a shock if you get that low. And then, oh, yeah, we have some of the extra ones. Yeah, 64.
Yeah, these are more the analytical ones.
Yeah, and still 1 and 2 in all these ones. Our RPI, they've been number 2. I think they've either been 1 or 2 a lot of the year, and I think Georgia loves, or RPI loves Georgia. 64 analytics, which has been the one we talked about, that's more of a holistic analytics idea, still had Texas number 1 there. So, yeah, I will give Kendall Rogers his flowers, a guy who I know a lot of people don't love, but he was very positive about Texas and brought out numbers like, hey, they're still a top 2 RPI team. They still are best in quad 1 of any team in the country, still the best in quad 1 and 2. This team is fine. They're still a very highly ranked team. And I think, maybe Connor, if you want to pull up the SEC race, because that's really what matters at the end of the day, is winning this SEC regular season title. Because obviously these numbers are, you know, it was Texas and some teams here, and now it's Texas and Arkansas right here. But poor Missouri down at the bottom, poor South Carolina. But there are some very obvious clumps of how this shows out, where Texas and Arkansas are at the top. Like we said, that magic number is 5. Texas gets that 24 win mark, but they have gotten it. If Arkansas loses one game, it's a 23 win mark, 22, et cetera, et cetera. So it's those two teams very much at the top. And then that big clump of LSU, Tennessee, Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and Auburn, all just good teams. Like you see here that Georgia's tied for 4th in the SEC and they're number 1 team. Either way, there's a lot of clumps. These teams in the clumps, apart from LSU, I don't even think can physically get to that number 1 seed. So
they can't. It's LSU and Arkansas. At this point, those are the only two. And LSU, I believe,
they need a miracle.
Would have to lose every game. LSU would have to win every game to win.
Yeah.
And so Arkansas is really the only real, like, realistic threat.
And Arkansas has a tiebreaker over Texas because it is head to head in case of a tie. So Texas really, you know, that 2-game lead is just 2 games. But, you know, we've talked about where it's going for the rest of the way. Tennessee and LSU do play Arkansas at the end of the year. It's one of the things that's helped Arkansas is the schedule has been a little bit easier in terms of front-loaded versus back-loaded, whereas Texas is facing a Florida team that, we've talked about, is hot, but you can see that they're right there with Kentucky and A&M, Mississippi State, who Texas has already played, won 8 of those 9 games, and then you're going to play against a better Oklahoma team who's, you know, it's at Oklahoma, but it feels like this could be another sweep weekend for Texas. And if they do that, then they are right there to winning that SEC regular season title, which the first season would just be an awesome experience for all the Texas fans involved.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, because Arkansas would have to almost go undefeated. They would have to go undefeated, I think, to pretty much secure it. And that's against LSU and Tennessee. And those are the two next hardest teams to beat in the conference besides Georgia. So it's just – it does feel like if Texas can just win these next two series, forget about a sweep, right, just win the next two series, and how cool would this be for year one in the SEC, such a prestigious conference that this is. Because this is a hard conference to win. I know, look, if it happens right, Texas fans are going to immediately go to Twitter and they're going to start talking about the softest conference, right? Like, does the E stand for easy in the SEC, right? Like, things like that. But
super easy conference.
Man, it's just what a, if we're able to win the conference in our first year in the SEC, what a special season. And it just cements that Texas baseball, in my opinion, the only other school that can even talk about themselves in the same light as a, you know, college baseball prestige is LSU. USC could be in that boat, but they don't care about sports enough over there at Southern California.
Not anymore.
Just a little personal sidebar. I hate that. Like, I wish that USC would put a lot of money into USC baseball, because that's just one of those old school historical programs that it really means a lot to college baseball, and it hasn't meant worth a shit since the year 2000. So it'd be cool to see them, you know, do well in baseball at some point. But as of right now, it's Texas and then LSU and then everybody else.
And that's, you've already seen the recruiting rankings really show that with how Schloss has done already for the 26 and 27 classes. I think that might wrap us up here, Nash. Been a long episode, a lot of talk about a rough series, but of course, still 1-2 in pretty much everything. This is still one of the better teams in college baseball. I'm going to quit my yapping. I'm going to give you for the first time in a while any last words, and then we'll sign out for the day.
My last words would be looking at the DSR. I know you talked about earlier that Georgia, you know, Georgia's got the lead in the RPI. Dartmouth just keeps on dragging us down there. DSR, we're number two to Arkansas, but the cool thing about that is, I mean, Arkansas's at 1,661 points. Texas at 1,660 points. The next team is 1,613. So it's a very small gap between 1 and 2. And the funny thing is Arkansas, their best win is against Texas, and our worst loss is obviously against Arkansas.
Yep.
Same game one, the 0-9. Would have loved to avoid that one, but I mean, you just look that this Texas team, they're in the position to do everything they want to going into the season, and we're getting into the territory where we might get Max Ballou back pretty soon. Strap in. It's going to be a fun end of the season.
Yeah, and of course, these last two series, you know, they're going to be away to Oklahoma. But after that, there's going to be baseball in Austin this postseason, which is always
senior weekend tonight. Or senior weekend this weekend.
Yeah, so big weekend for Texas baseball. Big weekend for myself, not to shout myself out. But just a lot going on with Texas baseball. But that's going to be all from us here at Inside Texas Baseball. I've been Evan, Nash alongside me as always. Thank you all for watching so much. We'll see you next week.
Welcome. Okay.